Following interview with the candidates for Sonoma County Sheriff's Office was conducted on April 3rd, 2018 in the studio of Radio KBBF in Santa Rosa. The host is Elaine B. Holtz.
We are live from KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. Good afternoon. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm the host of Women's Spaces. But today I have a new program that I'm participating in. I have the honor of presenting a special interview with the three candidates for the sheriff here in Sonoma County, California. A little background. This is the first time in over three decades that we have a choice for sheriff. It is very important that folks vote and encourage their friends and family to vote on June 5th for this very important position. The Sonoma County Sheriff's race is a primary that's going to be held on June 5th, 2018. And the top two votes may go into a runoff, but we have our fingers crossed that maybe one person will be the winner. But anyway, people have to vote on June 5th. It's very, very important. The three candidates are Mark Essex, John Mutz, and Ernesto Alvarez. Each candidate will have approximately 17 minutes, and will answer four questions. Each candidate received a copy of the same questions, which included a notice that during the interview, we're also going to have one secret question that they have no idea about. I want to do a special shout out to KBBF for providing the airtime, and to my engineer and co-producer Ken Norton for being part of the program here and on controls. How, Ken, a new hat we're wearing.
Yep.
I mean, it's just really wonderful. And a real shout out to Edgar Avila, our program director here at KBBF, for helping to make this program possible at this time. Well, we're going to begin with our first interview. The first interview is going to be with Ernesto Alvarez. And before we start, I want to thank him. He helped us set up the studio. I mean, what a talented man you are, Ernesto.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you so much for coming in here. Let me tell the folks a little bit about Ernesto before I ask him his questions. In 1979, Ernesto was hired by the Santa Rosa Police Department, where he served in a variety of assignments until his retirement in 2008, which he didn't stop there. Then he was elected to the Santa Rosa City Council, on which he still serves. I believe this is his third term. Ernesto was the city's first Latino council member and served as mayor from 2010 to 2012. Ernesto has also served as chair of the Santa Rosa Violence Prevention Partnership and oversaw the development and implementation of the city's second violence prevention program. That's really a big piece of information about you, Ernesto. Ernesto currently serves as the executive director of the California City's Violence Prevention Network, CVPN, and is nationally recognized leader in violence prevention and community-based law enforcement. And I want to encourage folks to go on his website, which is Ernesto Alvarez for Sheriff, and you can find out all kinds of information about him. This is just a little snippet of what I thought was important to present. Well, welcome. Welcome this afternoon to KBBF, Ernesto Alvarez.
It's a pleasure, Elaine. It's always a pleasure to meet with you and to be interviewed by you personally.
Oh, thank you. This is our second interview.
It is.
You know, it's really shocking. I can't begin. I hope folks can hear it in my voice, but I am so excited and so honored to be able to do this interview, to let folks know about the men that are running for this very important office. You know, I really believe the sheriff is one of the most important people in our community, and he's one of the most independent. So it's very important that we make the right choice. We don't make the right choice by just getting a bunch of pamphlets in the mail. We make the right choice by getting out, meeting, and greeting these men and finding out what they stand for before we make our vote.
And Elaine, if I may, I just want to make one brief correction before I forget. The website is actually olivarisforsheriff.com.
Oh, thank you. I don't know where I must have gotten the one when you were running for
City Council. I don't want people to get in there and have an error message that they got the wrong site.
Well, let's start with the first question. Talk about, what is your motivation? I mean, here you are. You were a police lieutenant. Now you were served on the city council. You were a mayor. And now you're running for sheriff. What is your motivation? And what separates you from the other two candidates?
Well, I'll tell you, Elaine. I think we're seeing really a new sea change across the country with all the issues that have been going on across the country, especially in Washington. We've seen a lot of focus on our police Police Department with incidents that have occurred over quite a few years. And we're seeing more of a demand from community to be more engaged with their local law enforcement agencies. And I think it's something that for many agencies has been a natural process, meaning it's a natural process of community policing. And these are areas that I have a lot of experience in my almost 40 years of public safety and public service experience. And right now in Sonoma County, I think, and you mentioned earlier how long it's been since we've had a contested election for Sonoma County Sheriff. I think right now there is that need for somebody that has the skill set to come in to provide an outside perspective into a large organization where the men and women of the organization continue to do a remarkable job of responding to the day-to-day issues out in the community. But I think what the community is looking for is at the leadership level to provide more transparency of the organization, to see the organization be more involved in partnership with the community to identify and resolve issues that are important to them. It's just interesting to me over the past year since I've been campaigning that the issues about violent or crime haven't really risen as a major issue. We do live in a relatively safe community, even at the national level, even though we do have some spikes here and there. But I think what is important for people in this election is engagement. It's how are you going to engage with community? What are you going to do to continue to work on issues that were tarnished, for example, as far as relationship and trust with the Andy Lopez incident from several years ago? It comes back to the focus of community. And I think if we focus on community, we could really identify partners to really move us forward into the right direction.
Wow, that is quite a lot to think about when you think about it with what you've said. And it's interesting that people are asking different questions, you know, that they're more concerned about transparency and about engagement.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's the second part of the question. What do you think separates you from the other two? We have Mark Essex, who is also a part of the Sheriff's Department, and then we have John Mutz, who comes from the L.A. Police Department. So what separates you from them?
I think what I bring to the table, Elaine, is this. Is that my experience level, my exposure to broad issues isn't narrowly focused within one department, meaning the Santa Rosa Police Department where I did most of my career. My work has taken me across the state and across the nation on some of the important issues that are important here in Sonoma County as well, meaning what are we doing to build safe and healthy communities? And that means my involvement primarily through the state organization, the California Cities Violence Prevention Network, is to help communities identify strategies that are comprehensive that don't rely solely on enforcement for solutions. How do we engage community in prevention, intervention, enforcement, and reentry efforts to build safe and healthy communities? It's my work at that level, not just at the state, but at the national level, and speaking at major conferences about how communities can do this. And it's also speaking on the topic of building trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve. I served on statewide committees here in California developing requests for proposals to issue funding to local communities and cities to develop programs to improve relationships, requiring them to partner with local community-based organizations, for example, to implement those programs. And I've done that at the federal level as well.
I have a question. So you actually were involved with an RFP, folks, is request for a proposal. In other words, what they're doing is asking for a certain level of funding for their county. So you actually worked on the implementation of actually writing the actual RFP?
Yes, I actually work with a committee, a statewide committee of about 15 professionals from different backgrounds around the state, and we developed the criteria for the allocation of the resources. But about $6 million that the governor allocated in 2016, and we included specifically the requirement that if you receive funding, you had to pass through 30% of it to a community-based organization to help in the implementation of that program. It couldn't just go to law enforcement. So that was a requirement. So we ultimately, I think we funded about 10 cities around the state, various levels of $600,000 to up to $800,000.
Well, I myself worked for CETA at one time in administration, so I know what it takes to write those RFPs. It's not that simple.
It's not a simple process, and I'll tell you too. The other disappointing thing for me is being involved in that process was even locally. the Sheriff's Department did not apply for those much-needed funds, even post Andy Lopez. So it's pretty much leaving $600,000, $800,000 on the table without even trying for it. And in my experience in reviewing the applications that came through, and obviously I would not have participated in rating the local one because of the conflict, but having seen others, from my perspective, it was one of those that I am confident that would have been funded to help implement some of the recommendations that came out of the task force.
Wow, that is very, very interesting to understand. Well, you know, I went out in the community, and this was a very important interview for me, and I just wanted to make sure that I got questions in place that were what people wanted to know. And, you know, in talking with folks, there are two issues of concern around law enforcement. The first one, is, of course, immigration and the relationship with ICE. What is your response to Attorney Jeff Sessions' lawsuit? I can't believe it. Lawsuit against California, which has declared itself a sanctuary state, and his attack on elected officials, calling them extremists. And, I mean, you're a Latino. I mean, so, I mean, how does this affect you? And what do you believe the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department needs to do and put in place with this issue?
Well, to be honest with you, I took offense with the comments that he made, especially the venue where he made these comments in front of law enforcement in Sacramento. It's almost as if he was coming to try to make some division, divide us between law enforcement and the community by presenting it to them and making that announcement there. To say that there was something wrong in California, and at the time I said, yeah, it's you. You need to leave. We're okay here. You know, I think the voters have spoken out loud and clear. The governor, the legislature has done a great job in implementing our sanctuary state. Are they going to knock us around? Yeah, they're going to knock us around. But I think that California has been a leader in many, many things, not just issues related to immigration, but also environmental issues, what we've done with cannabis. There's just so many things that we continue to be a leader on. So, it's from my perspective as sheriff, my role is to protect our community, everyone in our community.
Well, what would that look like? Like someone comes in from ICE and all of a sudden you find out maybe someone's in the jail or something is happening. How would you handle that?
What the state regulations did is it put us on an even playing field. Before that came about, every county could have a different policy on how they interacted with immigration. And that's really unfair. It's unfair to the residents. It's unfair to the immigrants that live in our community. This puts us on an even playing field. It clearly identifies the types of crimes that somebody can be deported for after they have been convicted, and that's important because we have seen the impacts of not having uniform policies by fear being caused out in our immigrant community, not seeking medical attention, not going to school. Even during the fires, much of our immigrant community fled to the coast because they didn't trust going to the shelters. So I have to be that leader, that spokesperson, to give our community a sense of encouragement and safety, that I'm here to protect them using the rules and laws that I have available to me. It's working with Jerry Threat, for example, at Olearo, when he goes out and has listening sessions with the immigrant community about what their concerns are, to ask to join him to hear firsthand what are the concerns and how can we identify strategies to maintain our safety in our community to keep this vulnerable population safe.
Well, I have to say that I'm very happy to hear you say that you're willing to work with that organization. I mean, the community worked very hard, as you know, to
absolutely
help put it in place.
Yes, absolutely, so. And we need to help make them successful.
Well, now, the next part of this question is, of course, and this is always an ongoing question, and it's diversity in law enforcement. And as a host of a Women's Spaces program and as talking to many, many women in many different areas, there's a real concern about having more and more women on the force, more diversity, and also with women, you know, with minorities, people of color. So what is your plan to try to bring more people into the force?
Yeah, so we're dealing with, I would believe, across the board cultural change in law enforcement, where traditionally you did not have a lot of women in policing.
Thank goodness.
There were a few when I came on back in the early 70s, but they have been around. But I think it's going to be specific to each organization because this is not only a problem in Sonoma County. It's happening across the nation. And I've been on conference calls with chiefs from around the country trying to resolve these issues. But I think it starts internally. Number one is, does a female or somebody of color feel welcomed working for the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office or the Santa Rosa Police Department or the Petaluma Police Department, for example? It has to be a welcoming environment. Is it inclusive? Going there, do I see people that look like me? for example. And I think that's important. The other thing is to identify any barriers that may exist internally and work to eliminate them. And then the other thing is how do we engage community in identifying potential recruits? We all own this. It's not just on the role of the sheriff, but it's the role of the community to increase the diversity of that organization. I'm going to be changing some recruitment and hiring practices. We can't always just recruit here in Sonoma County. We need to take the show on the road, and I've done that with the Santa Rosa Police Department. For example, if I knew there was an annual conference of Latino peace officers in L.A., I would take a recruitment team there to their conference to recruit, asking them to come and apply for the Santa Rosa Police Department. I would do that at an African-American conference, women in policing, a gay, lesbian, transgender conference, all of those. The other thing we would do is go to regional academies up and down the state and first send the application, get them to apply, but then go do the testing there. If it was Fresno, we would show up in Fresno and actually do the testing there on site.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
This is diverting a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not even part of the secret, but you brought something up in mind.
Yeah.
The way you're talking and the way you're able to go out to these different groups, why do you think it hasn't happened in this county? I mean, why is that such a problem?
Well, it's something. Well, it has happened obviously with my department, because that's one of the things that I did. But I guess it's a matter
with the sheriff's department.
But it hasn't with the sheriff's. I guess it's a matter of choice. I don't know what level of external recruitment they have done. It's not enough to put the notice up. You have to be active. You have to be active in going out there and recruit people to come. Tell them why they should. What's here for me? What's in Sonoma County? What's at the sheriff's office? And there are other internal processes related to hiring that I want to change. The biggest one is going to be to include the community in that process. Imagine yourself, Elaine, being one of five members of sitting with other law enforcement professionals during the interview process of a new recruit to provide your input. Imagine yourself and five other community members sitting on a separate panel providing input on a current employee's promotional abilities, for example. So you'd be able to ask questions as well. Those are fundamental changes.
Be careful, Ernesto. I might think of that as an invitation if you win. You know, we have this on record.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, just kidding. Okay, let's go down now to the question that I haven't told you about. You know, it's really interesting. I've heard the word culture. You mm-hmm. got to change the culture. You got to change the law enforcement culture. You got to bring in more minorities. You got to bring in more women. But you know, when I look at the culture, I think of it as how we respond. And that when I start thinking about this question, I did not quite know how to approach it until I came across an article that ran in the Press Democrat, written by Paul Payne, on January 6, 2014, where he's talking about the young, remember, I don't know if you remember, it was called Andy's Youth. There was a group of young people from the Andy Lopez that he went to school with him, mm-hmm. and they were protesting. Well, they ended up in the sheriff's department, and unfortunately, I happened to be there that day. And when I saw the SWAT team on the roof, and I saw the guns pointed down, I thought, my God, what kind of world are we living in, that here's our young people, they're suffering, they lost their young friend. And also, what was even more interesting about it is it costs something like $225,000 just to maintain that type of activity and action against these people, peaceful protesters. What do you have to say about that, and how would you have handled it if you would have seen these young people who were grieving for their friend coming toward you?
Yeah, you know, it's not too dissimilar from the outrage and voice of our country's youth as it relates to gun violence, and which is being treated differently. There was a reaction there locally. But here's the thing. Here's the underlying factor is what have we been doing? What have we been doing in Sonoma County to address relationship issues, racial issues historically? The time to start building relationships is not during a time of crisis. What I see across the country is cities that have incidents similar to Andy Lopez where things really get bad. You will find that those are communities where they have had a very poor effort in building relationships historically in that community. There's been tension, whether it's racial or otherwise. In those communities where things don't blow up as much and it's more peaceful, if you will, but there's still anger, you will find that they have a long history of strong community engagement in the community that actually prevents that from happening. That is the key. We have to be willing to listen. We have to be willing to address and listen to issues that have been around for a long time, but we tend to avoid. avoid. And just talking about race, for some people, talking about race is uncomfortable. It's there. There's issues from the past, but we don't have the discussions, and we need to have those before we're able to move forward. And I want to be doing more of that in our community.
Well, it's a big issue. I could tell.
It certainly is.
I could tell even as we think about it and we talk about it. And one suggestion that I would make is that we need more and more dialogue, and that's why the group of Violero is so important in our community.
They and the Commission on Human Rights as well can do a lot of work in that
amazing
area.
Amazing. Well, Ernesto Oliveras, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming and doing such a great interview. Any last? We're going to go get Mark Essex is going to come
certainly.
In.
No, certainly. Like I said, always a pleasure coming and talking to you. Elaine, I look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, I want to wish you all the luck in the campaign. I mean, I'm just so excited that our county actually has three strong candidates. I mean, it's going to be a hard choice for a lot of
people. Yes, and they have a lot of homework to do.
Well,
good.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to bring in Mark Essex now. Mark, are you here? Well, this has been just amazing, you know, listening to Ernesto Oliveras, one of the candidates, and where Mark Essex is going to be coming in, and then after that we're going to have John Mutz. You know, it's very, very interesting. You know, if anybody has any comments or any thoughts about this program, to please email me at elaine@womenspaces.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Well, here we have another candidate sitting across from me. I'm telling you guys, this is amazing. These are three very, very interesting man. You know, as you sit across and talk to them and look at them, you really realize that we have some good choices here in Sonoma County. Well, welcome Mark Essex, welcome to Women's Space. Oh, I'm not on Women's Spaces, this is a special election program. Welcome to KBBF 89.1 FM. And before we start, if you mind, I'd like to tell our listeners just a little bit about you.
Of course.
Well, Mark Essex is known in the community as Captain Mark Essex. Began his career with the Sheriff's Office as a correctional office in 1994. Not one to shy away from tough assignments, Captain Essex has operational experience in detention, patrol, special operations, field training, personnel management, and internal affairs. Well, I'd like to ask him how he keeps a positive attitude with all these different areas. My goodness. As an executive manager, he has commanded both the Administrative Services Division and the Field Services Division. Captain Mark Essex has served as both administrator. Oh, I just said that. He has been responsible for the day-to-day operations in multiple divisions, managing budgets greater than, oh my goodness, $50 million, and overseeing more than 250 employees who provide public safety around the clock. His strong leadership is uniquely qualified him to be sheriff. And for more information, you can go to Mark Essex for Sheriff 2018.com. And
yes,
you can find out even more. You can find out that he actually volunteers with the Little League. So thank you so much, Mark. Thank you for coming on.
Elaine, thank you so much for having me on. I feel like we're old friends. I've known you now since 2014.
Oh, my God.
We first met when I was on the task force, and you came to many of our meetings. So thank you very much for inviting me, and it's good to see you.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I mean, we've had some really great conversations during that time.
Yes, we have.
Well, listen, you know, just like I did with the other two candidates, I sent you the information in the email, you know, gave you the question. So let's start with the first question. You know, what was your motivation for being a candidate for sheriff? I mean, we've been with the office for quite a long time. And what separates you from the other two candidates?
Well, I think you kind of hit it right off the bat there. I've never been one to shy away from a challenge. I've been at the sheriff's office for nearly 24 years, and I don't take that just as the only reason I'm running. But I'm running for sheriff because I know what the sheriff's office does well. I've been there for 24 years, but I also know the areas that we can improve. And the sheriff's office has been a place, really the primary place I've worked my entire career. 24 years there, but I worked about a year in juvenile hall for a total of about 25 years in law enforcement and public safety. But it's really important to me. It's where I started. I have a deep level of commitment and a sense of duty to the sheriff's office. My family lives here. I grew up in the North Bay. So there's really a sense of duty to lead the sheriff's office. And I think I'm uniquely positioned there in that I have been there for quite a while. I've risen up through the ranks. I've held many different positions, and I've seen the things that we do well, and I've seen the things that we don't do well. And I'm one of those people, and I think you can attest to this, you've known me for a while, that is it is willing to say, hey, wait a minute, we're doing something wrong here, we need to fix it and go a new direction. And that's based on input from the public and the community and what they need.
Well, just, you know, even though we didn't include this in the questions, I just you just sparked something with me. I just like to ask you, so what would you do, what do you see, especially in the time that you were dealing on the task force, what would you have done differently? What do you see needs to be changed?
No, that's a great question. There's really three big things, and those are my three major platforms on this campaign. I saw these early on, and they've stuck with me. Transparency. We have to be more transparent and accountable to our community. They expect to have a peek inside the sheriff's office on how decisions are made, and they expect us to be accountable when we screw up. That's number one. Number two is community policing. What really came out of the task force and really came to a head was the need for community policing. We have to be out there engaging the community, developing relationships before challenges happen. So we have that relationship and we can work through challenges because they will happen. We know that. And then finally is diversity in our hiring. We know that we do not currently look like the community that we serve. It should always be the mission of the sheriff's office to represent the diverse community we serve, not just based on color of skin, but based on experiences, lifestyles, different lenses that people have, because a diverse workforce for us makes us more legitimate to the community we serve and helps us better serve the community.
Well, it's such a big responsibility, and you know, there's so many factors involved. I mean, I never realized the power of the sheriff's department until I got involved with the Andy Lopez situation. I began to see how it operates and some of its function. So, what do you think after talking about that? What do you think separates you from the other candidates? What is different? I mean, not that one is better than the other, but what separates you? What gives you more qualifications, say, than the other two?
I think what really sets me apart and would be important for your listeners to know is I'm the only candidate with current law enforcement experience. Things have changed so much over the last 5 years or 10 years, let alone the last 20 years, that it's really important that we have someone running for sheriff and who is our sheriff who understands contemporary, current law enforcement management. What really sets me apart from the other two folks is that they have not been involved in law enforcement for quite a while. One of them hasn't been involved in law enforcement for 20 years, and one of them has been out of it for 10 years. Now, they're both fine men. They both do a great job in what they do, but the fact of the matter is they're simply not qualified to be the leader of the sheriff's office. They do not have the current contemporary experience. So that is primarily where I would go with that. The second thing I just want to get in real quickly is that I'm also the only candidate who has both a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a master's degree in business. We have to understand that we are a criminal justice agency, and we also have a huge budget. As you mentioned, we have nearly $180 million budget.
Oh, I only had $50 million down here, $180.
Well, the portion I was responsible for was $50 million as a captain, but our overall budget is nearly $180 million, and that is a huge responsibility. Those are taxpayer dollars, and my master's degree in business certainly gives me a unique perspective in being able to run such a large organization.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, that's important information to know. Now, let's go into the next part. You know, I talked to many, many folks, and it seems like the most important thing to people is this immigration issue that's happening right now. I mean, it's kind of scary. I know myself, I'm actually a first-generation American from my father's side, you know, and so when I hear about immigration, and also born of a Jewish race, so when I hear of immigration, my hair stands on end when I think about it. So right now, the question I have is, what is our relationship with ICE? What is your response to attorney, Jeff Sessions' lawsuit against California, which has declared itself a sanctuary state, and his attack on our elected officials, calling them extremists? We do believe the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department needs to put in place something to handle this. How would you put that? What would you put in place to handle this?
Well, you bring up a very good point there at the beginning of your question. We are a nation of immigrants, and I absolutely value that. I value that kind of going back to my diversity answer there. We all have unique perspectives, And those unique perspectives make us stronger, not weaker. So I absolutely appreciate people who have immigrated from other countries, have a different perspective on life, relationships, religion, and different forms of government. So what I think is going on with our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is he's really engaging in a battle of rhetoric with our governor. And although it's very disturbing and very disconcerting to many people in our community, I want to assure you and your listeners that the Sheriff's Office does not and has not asked people their immigration status in the entire time that I've worked there. So in over 24 years, I, as a peace officer, have never, ever asked someone their immigration status, and it's against the Sheriff's Office policy to ask someone their immigration status.
Well, you know, I can't help but bring this up, and it's because you've worked with Sheriff Steve Freitas.
Sure.
And we know that when Trump was elected that Freitas went to see Sessions.
Yes, he did.
What was your thought on, I mean, here you are, you're an insider, you're sitting there. What was your thought on that? What was your feeling?
Well, I did not know in advance that Sheriff Freitas was meeting with Attorney General Sessions after the election. But I will give you, I didn't know about that. So I can't really say I had any knowledge or advised him one way or the other. I can say this. As an elected official here locally, it's always an opportunity to meet with a member of the federal government. We send our elected officials here, city council members, board of supervisor members, back to Washington, D.C. all the time to meet with our elected leaders back there. Some of them we agree with, some of them we don't agree with, but to have a chance to be in the room with someone and possibly have an influence on them as to how their policies may play out, I think is worthwhile. So although Jeff Sessions is certainly a controversial person, if I had a chance to meet with him, I think I would take it because it would give me a chance to tell him what's important here in Sonoma County and let my voice be heard. It's always important that we get to have those voices that don't agree with us confronting us. And so I would definitely take that as an opportunity.
Well, I have to give you that one.
Thank
because
you.
We didn't always agree with each other, and yet we're able to sit across the table
exactly.
and still have a decent conversation. So there is a point in that you have to have a handle on it.
Yes.
But what would happen if all of a sudden, say, a person who's undocumented was put into, was arrested, say, for some infringement? How would you handle that?
So, yes, to get back to your question, if someone is arrested in Sonoma County, let's just say for a minor crime, let's call it drunk in public, right, misdemeanor. If they're arrested in our county, they come to our jail. They are fingerprinted, and those fingerprints are sent to the state of California. The state of California immediately retransmits those fingerprints to the FBI. Within about 20 minutes, Homeland Security has a copy of those electronic fingerprints, and they check those against a database of previously deported people. If, for instance, it was me, and my fingerprints came back that I was a previously deported person, ICE or Homeland Security would notify the sheriff's office and say, hey, Mark Essick, he's currently in your custody. He's been arrested for being drunk in public, and we want him. When he gets out of custody, we want him because he's previously deported. Well, under our current policy, and I should really importantly say under the current law, SB 54, the California Values Act, which was just approved and signed by the governor, makes it or prohibits the sheriff's office from responding to those kinds of inquiries. Really what SB 54 did is it set a very specific set of very serious violent felonies that a person must be convicted of before the sheriff's office can cooperate. So the scenario I just gave you, we would not cooperate with ICE. We would not provide them any information at all about that arrest. Now, on the flip side, I know we're probably a little short on time, but what I want to say is on the flip side, if, for instance, I was a convicted robber, I'd been convicted of robbery, and it was a very serious crime, and ICE asked for my information, under SB 54, it permits the sharing information with ICE because I've been convicted of a violent, serious felony. So SB 54 brought a lot of clarity. It kind of leveled the playing field for us, so to speak. California sheriffs and California police chiefs now have a very good idea of what they can and what they can't do when it comes to dealing with ICE.
Well, thank you. And the next question is diversity in law enforcement. What are some of your ideas about creating more diversity, i.e. having more women on the force and more minorities and people of color?
This has been a reoccurring question throughout the campaign, and I'm glad to give you some information about that. First of all, We are not unique at the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office. We face the same challenges that other law enforcement agencies in the state face and nationwide. It is very difficult to recruit women and people of color into law enforcement. And there's cultural barriers, and there's many other barriers that are out there that prevent that. So what we have to do is a continuous recruitment, a continuous acknowledgement that we must recruit women and we must recruit people of color, not just because of the color of their skin or their gender, but because, as I mentioned earlier, and I am a little passionate about this, because of what they bring to us with their experience. That is the absolute biggest key there. And I do kind of want to set the record straight, if you don't mind. You know, the sheriff's office has been criticized that we don't have enough people of color and enough women in management positions. I want to make sure I state for you publicly and very much for the record that our assistant sheriff of detention, the number one person who runs our entire detention division, is an African-American man. My partner and one of my best friends at the sheriff's office, Captain Al Vernon, is an African-American man. The number one person of our non-sworn division at the sheriff's office, Miss Heidi Keith, is a woman. So we have minorities and we have women in the top ranks of the sheriff's office. Among the top five or six people in the sheriff's office, we have a very diverse group. And then one step down in our first level managers, our law enforcement managers that manage our actual patrol functions, we have five lieutenants. Of those five lieutenants, we have one African-American, two Latino, and two Caucasians. So we have diversity in our management ranks. We must continue, though, to recruit women and promote women to show that we're putting our money where our mouth is. Not only do we want you to be our employee, but we're going to promote you if you're talented and you're good at your job.
Well, one thing, too, the sheriff has done that I have to do a little shout-out for is they hired a young woman by the name of Misty Harris for the PR.
She's great.
She's just doing a marvelous job.
Yes.
Okay, let's get to the last question. We've got 2 minutes left here, okay. And that is, you know, they talk a lot about culture.
Yes.
And, again, you were there, so you experienced it. You were there firsthand, and I was there too the day that the Andy's Young Youth came out. You know, when I start looking at the word culture, I was trying to figure out how could I ask this question, and I happened to find this article in the Press Democrat written by Paul Payne. I'm going to repeat it again, on January 6, 2014, and I was thinking about culture, and when I thought about the youth, Andy's youth, when they came upon the sheriff's department, and I was with them that day, and all of a sudden we saw the SWAT team with the guns pointed down. I almost had a heart attack myself. I couldn't believe it. The kids were kind of frozen. If given the opportunity today as sheriff, how would you have handled that situation? I mean, I couldn't believe that happened.
Yeah. Elaine, I think the best parallel I can give you there is this the movement that these young people are taking right now about guns in our country. Young people have a voice. Their voice is just as strong and just as valid as an adult's voice. And their First Amendment right to free speech is paramount. And as a peace officer, one of my obligations under the California Constitution and the federal Constitution is to enhance, accept, and allow people to express themselves under their First Amendment rights. So I think if we could go back and do that, and if I was in charge of the sheriff's office when that happened, I would certainly make sure that those people felt comfortable expressing their First Amendment rights, and that includes having them tell us that they're mad at us and they're dissatisfied with us. We don't. The First Amendment doesn't stop when the conversation gets tough. Actually, it's where the First Amendment really kicks in, is when the conversation gets tough. So I think we should have had a better opportunity for those people to express themselves. You know, there was a little bit of violence, there's a little bit of vandalism, and we always have to take care of those things. But by and large, that crowd was people who wanted to express themselves, and we need to make that sure that happens.
Well, Mark Essex, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being such a great guest, and
thank
I want
you.
To wish you much success in this campaign. And, you know, one of the things for myself sitting across now the second candidate, it's going to be a real strong choice for people. They really have to start getting – they have to know each one of you, and they have to read about each one of you, and they have to listen to each one of you and make a choice based on that, not just flyers coming through the mail.
I agree.
So I want to thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And I would appreciate if your voters would vote for me on June 5th. I look forward to serving as your next Sonoma County sheriff.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're getting ready to have number three. Is number three here going to come into the studio? Are you around, John Mutz? Is John here? Oh, I'm telling you, this is a very, very interesting program sitting here. And I really appreciate some of the answers. And, you know, I hope, you know, when I'm listening to the candidates, and it's a really important election. And the rumor has it that when they do these June elections, it's a low turnout. Well, this is very important. You know, the sheriff is the most important guy in town when you start thinking about it. And we need a good, strong leader this year. Anyway, we have our third guest into the studio here, John Mutz. Welcome, John. Welcome to this special election candidate program.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. And you're the third one. You had a chance to listen to
everybody. I am, yes. Thank you. Thank you. It was very interesting listening to the other two candidates.
I know. It's so exciting, you know, to think the first time in almost three decades that we have this choice. It's just amazing.
It is.
Well, let me tell the folks a little bit about you, John, before we start the interview. John Mutz is a former station commander. He was instrumental in guiding a courageous transformation within three stations in the Los Angeles Police Department. From a culture which had idealized aggressive tactics, isolation, and top-down authority to a service-based organization that prioritized community engagement, outreach, and transparency. John is currently a certified mediator and trainer, twice presented at the Conference for Global Transformation. You're going to have to explain that a little bit. And frequently sought out by the media as an expert on transforming law enforcement cultures in order to improve community trust. Even after retirement, John once again was asked to bring his skills and experience to bear on allegations of rampant racial profiling and deteriorating community relations. John was a key member of a task force that worked to address issues of systematic racism, rebuild trust, and restore an open community dialogue. For further information, you can go to johnmutzforsheriff.com. And I want to make one statement. The reason that I'm not telling all kinds of personal information about the candidates is because there's many forums going on. We're going to have a forum at the League of Women Voters that's going to be happening on April 9th at the Grayton Community Center, 8996 Grayton Road. And there's also going to be one on April 12th. It's going to be a cannabis debate at the Glazier Center. So you can find out all the personal information. So thank you once again, John, for being here and being open to doing this interview. So I sent you the questions, and so you know what questions we're going to ask, and also we have one secret question, which is going to be, it's no longer a secret. Everybody heard everybody else's answer, but that's okay. So the first question is what is your motivation for being a candidate for sheriff? And what separates you from the other two? I mean, there are three of you, excitingly running.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Elaine. Why I'm running for sheriff is very simple. There's two points. One is I learned of the death of Andy Lopez, and I looked at that entire matter, the horrible, horrible mistake that took his life, and then I looked at the not only the sheriff's response, but the Santa Rosa City response as well. And, you know, Lane, I have a lot of experience in policing over 40 years, and I was just confounded by, you know, the tragic death of a 13-year-old boy and the response to it. So while Andy's death is not the only reason I ran, it was very influential. Second of all, I hadn't been here too long, and I was approached by community leaders here who were following the development of the Law Enforcement Task Force. That's a task force that predated IOLERO. And I talked to several of those members, actually met with a couple of them when they attended a conference on civilian oversight. And in the course of my conversations with them and answering their questions and being a resource, that led to them asking me to agree to run for sheriff. So while that's a big decision to make, I took my time, talked to my wife, and realized that it was time for someone like me with my knowledge, my education, my experience, not only locally, state, and nationally, but to step in and agree to run. So those are the two prominent points that had me run.
So what do you find, what is different about what, between the three of you? What do you find?
Well,
what separates you
from what separates me from the other two candidates? Well, it's experience, Elaine. I've been a street cop. I've been a detective. I've been a lieutenant. I've been a station commander. I was a captain for 10 years, Elaine, and the most challenging commands one could imagine. Hundreds and hundreds of employees, thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people that I policed. And I had four different commands, all commands that required me to come in and change the culture of that station and then go into the community and establish trust that had been broken. So there's a lot of experience there. And not only that, Elaine, but when I left the police department, I was still called to be a resource around the country. Places like San Francisco, Baltimore, Ferguson, New York, Chicago, Seattle. These are all cities across the country facing the same issues that we have in our county, and I was a resource for them.
So you think that the fact that what separates you is the fact that you've been able to visit other, besides being a consultant. When I read your resume, it's like you were consulting on these issues, but you also got to see what they were doing and what they were implementing.
Right. I mean, the challenge we have in Sonoma County today calls for a deep sense of experience, not only certainly locally, but also statewide and nationally. It's only looking at the broader aspects of these challenges nationally that we can actually focus locally and make a difference here. That's the difference, really, between any other candidate, myself, and among us, is it's a matter of experience. You know, one candidate has only been a captain for a couple of years and worked in administrative assignments. And then the other candidate was a middle manager and never had a command. So having a geographic command in very difficult areas and showing results is really important to be able to step into the sheriff's job.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that answer. Well, you know, I went out in the community and I talked with several people and to try to find out what were some of their concerns, and knowing that we're only going to have an hour, you know, how do you really bring it down to make it as simple as possible? So let me ask you the first question. There were two issues of concern around law enforcement that I heard about. Let's talk about the first one, immigration and the relationship with ICE. What is your response to Attorney Jeff Sessions' lawsuit against California, which has declared itself a sanctuary state, and his attack on our elected issues, calling them, I can't believe this, extremists? What do you believe the Sonoma County Sheriff Department needs to do to put in place to handle all of this?
Well, Elaine, first of all, we have to stand up to the fear-mongering and the bigotry that is coming out of the Attorney General and the White House. And we can do that here in Sonoma County. We're doing it here in California. And what we're doing is we're taking a stand to protect the Latino immigrant communities that face this risk. So the rhetoric alone is disturbing. However, when you marshal federal police, in the case of ICE, to come in and threaten our families, undermine their safety and security, alter their lifestyles, and put them under duress, it's the responsibility of the sheriff to stand up and say, we will not cooperate. Our responsibility is to the safety and security of all families. And due to the relationship law enforcement has had with many Latino and immigrant communities, that is not initially believable. I mean, there has been long-term tension between law enforcement and Latino immigrant communities. I mean, we've had decades and decades of it. To deny it would be inaccurate. So we have to be able to go into those communities, establish personal relationships, positions of trust, open our doors to that community, and demonstrate that we are there to protect and serve them. And there's a variety of ways we can do that. Our allies are immigration lawyers, a social activist, rapid response. There's a lot of wonderful partners that the sheriff's office can have in our county that will maximize the safety and security of our people.
I think that's something that's very important that you mentioned, partnership with the community.
Right.
That is very important because I, in my own travels, sometimes I don't see that happening. So I'm glad you brought that point up.
Yeah, and Elaine, too, that partnership, the quality of that partnership, it's decided by the community, not law enforcement. The community decides the quality of that relationship. Well, oftentimes law enforcement decides, and that's not true. We have to actually understand that the community trusts us. That's our job.
Well, no, thank you for saying that. Well, now let's talk a little bit about diversity in law enforcement. What are some of the ideas that you have about creating more diversity? For example, women on the force and minorities, particularly men and women of color. What kind of action would you take, and how would you go about recruiting?
Well, first of all, Lane, you have to be the kind of sheriff that women and people of color, members of the LGBTQ community, would be attracted to and want to work for. First of all, you have to be that kind of person, number one. Number two, you also have to value that yourself and have the entire sheriff's office value diversity. And then thirdly, you have to really go out and reach out to quite a range of resources, local community colleges, local university, women's groups, different nonprofits. There's a wide range of partners who help you attract a diverse workforce.
Well, I imagine on some levels it's not quite as easy to recruit women. I know I'm sitting here thinking to myself, would I want to be a police officer? Would I want to work for the sheriff? My personality doesn't feel that way. So it must be a real challenge to bring women in.
It is. It's women have faced inequity and closed doors in a variety of industries. And law enforcement certainly has led the way. So, and we clearly know that the research shows that women in law enforcement add significant value to law enforcement. They add value wherever they are. So when we bring women into law enforcement in representative numbers, I'm not talking about one or two or three, to kind of check your box. I'm talking about representative numbers in law enforcement, and then we promote them. And when they're leading the organization, Elaine, the organization really reflects the kind of service that the community wants. Women are much more equipped to de-escalate situations. So they're just a big plus.
Well, I just feel if there's any women out there, start thinking about it because it really is important.
Yeah, we'll find them. We'll get them.
Anyway, the last question is our secret question, which is no longer a secret. You've had a chance to hear the other two candidates, which is okay with me. We talk a lot about culture. This word culture came up to me, and I kept thinking, what is culture? Is it, is your religion? What is it? And I found this article in the Press Democrat by Don Payne that was written on January 6th, 2014, that it cost something like $225,000 during a protest of youth. And I happened to be there that day when the Andes youth came out and protested the killing of this young boy. And when I got there, I saw the SWAT team on top of the sheriff's department with the guns pointing down, and I thought I just was going to have a heart attack. How would you have handled something like that when you saw a group of young people who were very distressed over the loss of their friend? These were junior high school. These were middle school students. How would you have handled that situation at that time? Or if you were sheriff?
Yes, very, very differently, Elaine. These were young people who had lost their friend. Their student friend had been killed, and they're grieving. And they're simply wanting to express their grief to authorities. The reaction, not only at City Hall, but at the Sheriff's Office, was to close doors, close ranks, and not give them the opportunity to express their grief. You know, when you stuff people's grief and you deny it, and then you try to use force to do that, it is absolutely the wrong direction. And it is something that we need to reconcile even today, and we can reconcile it. And until we actually reconcile that experience that those youth had, we will not be able to restore trust in the community with the sheriff's office. It simply won't be done.
Do you have any suggestion now that it's so late?
Yeah, we can own the mistake. We can own the horrific mistake of taking a 13-year-old boy's life. We can own that. It's never been owned. And secondly, we can go to the mother and express our deep condolences and tell her what we're going to put in place to make sure another 13-year-old boy isn't killed. Those are the first steps, Elaine.
Well, I want to thank you so much for John, and thank you so much for coming in and doing this wonderful, wonderful interview. And for my listeners out there, I want to remind you that you've been listening to a very, very special interview with the three candidates for sheriff. Ernesto Olivares was our first interviewee, and then we had Mark Essex, and now we have John Mutz. John, I know I've been rushing you a little bit. Any last words that you'd like to say to our listeners before we say goodbye? I'm sorry I didn't give it to the other candidates, but I noticed that they had a little bit more time than you did. So
yeah, Elaine, I just want to say it's an honor to represent the community and take the sheriff's office in a new direction. And I am deeply grateful for doing that. And I'm enlivened by the possibility that we can actually lead change in the sheriff's office. And I just hope everyone gets out to vote. And we have this chance to do it.
It's on June 5th. Well, everybody, you've been listening to a special interview with the three candidates for sheriff, Ernesto Olivares, Mark Essex, and John Mutz. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to give a big shout-out to KBBF 89.1 FM for having this program.
The previous interview with the candidates for Sonoma County Sheriff's Office, hosted by Elaine B. Holtz, was recorded in the radio studio of KBBF in Santa Rosa.